Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. In today's episode, we'll be focusing on the topic of design. Much like our Marketing 101 episode, consider this episode a free class about the topic of design. And this episode is sponsored by the Makers Fair. The Makers Fair is a local two-day event that showcases wonderful creations made by our very own creative community members. From food to written books, pottery, and handicrafts, there's something for everyone. Come support our local creators on December 11th and 12th from 2 to 5 p.m. at ICS. Thanks for your sponsorship. Now moving on, in this segment one of this episode, I'm joined by student designers Micah and Esther. Then for our second segment, I'll be joined by Mr. Darwin, a designer by trade. Stay tuned for this very informative episode about the topic of design. But first, Esther will be delivering our quote of the day, and Micah will be sharing some headline design news.
Our quote of the day comes from Neville Brody, a British type designer, graphic designer, and the former art director of Face magazine. He's quoted to have said, "Design is more than just a few tricks to the eye. It's a few tricks to the brain." This quote seems to emphasize that design goes beyond surface-level aesthetics. It's about engaging the mind on a deeper level. Brody suggests that effective design isn't just visually appealing, but is crafted to communicate ideas, evoke emotions, and shape perceptions. Design can influence the way people think, feel, or interpret a message. Good design uses visual elements, such as color, layout, and typography, not only to attract attention, but to create meaning, guide viewers' responses, and leave a lasting impact. Good design is a powerful tool that impacts perception and emotion, making it more than just decoration. It's a strategic form of visual communication. That's our quote of the day. Now on to some headline news.
Now moving on to some not-so-funny design news. Our first story is about the Tropicana the redesign disaster. According to Ad Age and Business Insider, Tropicana boldly decided to completely redesign its classic orange juice packaging in 2009. The original design, featuring a straw stuck into a juicy orange, was replaced by a minimalistic look, with a simple glass of orange juice and a different logo. Unfortunately, the redesign was a disaster for the brand. It failed to resonate with customers who found it unrecognizable and uninspiring. Sales reportedly dropped by 20% in just a few months, and Tropicana ultimately reverted to its original packaging design after losing around $30 million. This redesign is now a classic example of the importance of brand identity and customer familiarity in packaging design. Our next story has to deal with the 2012 London Olympics logo. Criticized and reported on by the BBC and The Guardian, the logo for the 2012 London Olympics became infamous for all the wrong reasons. The logo, designed by Wolf Olins, cost around £400,000 and was intended to symbolize the energy and spirit of the Games. However, the abstract jagged design, featuring the numbers 2012 in bright pink and yellow, was widely criticized for being confusing and unattractive. Some even claimed it resembled other controversial or inappropriate symbols. The backlash was swift, with many calling it one of the worst logos in Olympic history, proving that even the best intentions in modern, edgy design can sometimes fall flat with the public. For our final news story, it takes us to the Arial font confusion. According to Matthew B., who wrote a critique called Practical Typography, the design choice of the Arial typeface has one particularly frustrating flaw: the identical appearance of the lowercase l and the uppercase I. In most typefaces, designers aim to make characters visually distinct, improving readability. However, Arial's L and I look so similar that readers often mistake one for the other. This leads to miscommunication, especially in contexts that require precision. This issue has fueled ongoing criticism from designers and typographers who argue that Arial's lack of clarity makes it unfit for professional use, despite its widespread adoption in digital and print settings. And there's your not-so-funny design news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote and the headline news. I'm joined by Micah and Esther for this first segment, and we'll be covering the principles and elements of design. And there are seven of each. We can't do a deep dive in each principle or element, but we will share some definitions and add some extra commentary. Before we get into the seven principles and seven elements, we will share some core concepts about the topic of design. These concepts are not industry or discipline specific, meaning these concepts are universally applicable in all design disciplines. Micah and Esther will share about what some of these design discipline categories are. So go ahead first, Micah.
Like Mr. Jason said, the core concepts we'll share first can be applied uniformly to the following design disciplines. And the first discipline category would be visual communication design. This design discipline category would include graphic design, typography, illustration, brand design, and UI design, which stands for user interface design. Esther has our next category.
Another design discipline category would be product and industrial design. This broad category would include design disciplines such as industrial design, furniture design, packaging design, automotive design, and toy design.
Another broad design discipline category is spatial and environmental design. This category would include such design disciplines as interior design, architectural design, urban design, landscape design, and exhibition design.
And on to our next broad design discipline category. It is digital and interactive design. This category would include UX design, which stands for user experience design, web design, game design, motion graphic design, and design involving AR, also augmented reality, and VR, virtual reality.
All right, thanks for giving us some insight into the broad field of design disciplines. There are actually a few more categories, such as fashion and textile design, industrial process and engineering design, service design, and some miscellaneous categories, such as film and set and food design, and last but not least, information design. So with that in mind, here are some basic core concepts that can be applied to any of these broad design discipline categories. Micah, go ahead and give us our first core concept.
Alrighty then. Our first core concept states that design is fundamentally a craft that involves intentional arrangement of elements to achieve a specific purpose. To take this a step further, design combines art and industry to create visually appealing and functional solutions that effectively communicate a message. Design produces that has both form and function, which takes us to our next core concept.
Our second core concept is that form should reflect and support function, which in turn produces harmonious and effective solutions. The aesthetics of a thing should enhance the function of that thing. Neither should hinder the other.
Another core concept involves intent. Intent refers to the purpose or goal behind a particular action. Intent defines the question of why something is done or made. Intent is the driving force behind design. A clearly defined intent informs every decision made throughout the design process, ensuring that the final outcome fulfills its purpose. Intent and design are inseparable, working together to fulfill a purpose.
Our fourth and final core concept of design relates to the human mind. And to better understand this concept, you'll need to study the Gestalt principles, which could be its own podcast episode in and of itself. But in short, the Gestalt principles explain how people perceive and interpret visual information as a whole rather than as individual elements. These principles guide designers in creating work that is visually cohesive, intuitive, and impactful. Some examples include the principle of closure, proximity, and similarity. These can be applied to group elements which guide the viewer's eyes and enhance the overall experience.
All right, thank you for sharing those four core concepts of design. It's important that we share these core concepts first, which I think helps create a foundation for our next conversation, which is the principles and elements of design. In my book, Navigating Design, I cover all seven principles and all seven elements, while including very simple and basic illustrations for each. Because this is an audio-only podcast, we'll attempt to explain each with simple and clear words, to hopefully allow for your mind's eye to visualize what we are talking about. All right, let's start with the seven principles of design. Principles of design are defined as fundamental guidelines for organizing and arranging the elements in order to create a visually appealing, functional, and cohesive work. Micah, go ahead and start us off with our first principle of design, and then we'll work through these quickly since we have seven of them.
Pattern is our first principle. Pattern is defined as a repetition of visual elements like shapes, lines, or colors. An example of this principle can be seen in wallpaper design, which often includes a repeated image or motif which adds to the aesthetic or a room.
Contrast is our second principle. Contrast is the juxtaposition of different elements to highlight their individual properties and create visual interest. A simple Example of this is black text on a white background. This creates strong contrast, making the text easy to read.
Emphasis is our third principle. Emphasis is defined as drawing attention to specific elements by using techniques like size, placement, or contrast. An example of this principle could be a bright orange button or a muted gray web page. This draws attention and emphasizes it as a primary call to action.
Balance is our fourth principle. Balance is defined as the distribution of elements to create visual stability and harmony. There are three types of balance: symmetric, asymmetric, and circular. An example of this could be a magazine layout with a large image on one page balanced by text of equal visual weight on the opposite page.
Proportion and scale is our fifth principle. Proportion and scale can be defined as the relative size and relationship between elements within a design. An example of this principle can be seen in old cathedrals, where the large towering columns are proportionally scaled to the vast height of the ceiling, emphasizing the grandeur of the space and creating a sense of awe.
Harmony is our sixth principle. Harmony can be defined as the overall sense of unity and coherence in a design, which is achieved through the balance application of design principles. An example of this could be a set of kitchen appliances like a toaster, kettle, and blender designed with similar shapes, colors, and materials, which creates a harmony by ensuring the product looks like they go together when placed together on a countertop.
Movement and rhythm is our seventh principle. Movement and rhythm can be defined as a path a viewer's eye takes through a design, guided by elements that create a sense of flow or the direction of visual or movement flow. An example of this principle can be seen in a garden party that gently curves, with alternating plantings of flowers and shrubs. This creates movement and rhythm by guiding the eye along the path and offering a visual flow through the space.
Okay, now moving on, we'll share the seven elements of design. Thank you, guys. Unlike principles, which can be applied to anything, the elements of design are actually things that can be used in design. In order to not make this too long, we won't go in depth on each one like we haven't on the principles, so as they are self-explanatory by their name. Micah, go ahead and share the first element of design.
All right, so line is our first element. Line is a mark that connects 2 points that can vary in width, direction, or style.
Shape is our next element. Shape can be defined as a two-dimensional area enclosed by a line. Shape can be geometric or organic.
Form is our third element. Form is defined as a three-dimensional shape that has volume and depth. A square becomes a cube, a circle becomes a cylinder, and a triangle becomes a cone.
Color is our fourth element. Color is defined as the visual property of objects perceived by the eye, characterized by hue, saturation, and brightness. The traditional color wheel includes primary, secondary, and tertiary colors. Primary colors are not mixed, and there are three of them, which are red, blue, and yellow. Secondary colors are mixed, created by mixing two primary colors together, and tertiary colors are created by mixing one primary color with one secondary color.
Texture is our fifth element. Texture is defined as the surface quality of an object that can be visual or tactile. Rough, smooth, slippery, or sticky are just some of the words that can describe the element of texture, depending on how it looks or feels.
Space is our sixth element. Space can be defined as the area between or around objects in a design, including both positive and negative space. Yes, there is such a thing as negative and positive space, and both are very important.
Last but not least, we have value, which is our seventh element. Value is defined as a degree of lightness or darkness in a color or shade. The element of value can be used to create the illusion that a 2D object is 3D in appearance. Gradients and shading use value and can give the appearance of depth and create more interest to an object.
And there you have it. Thank you, Mike and Esther, for sharing some core concepts and the principles and elements of design. Our hope is that more and more people will have a better appreciation and understanding about the topic of design and how it affects just about every aspect of our lives, whether we realize it or not. All right, stay tuned for our second segment with special guest Mr. Darwin right after this short PSA.
Hey, Students Incorporated listeners, I wanted to invite you out to the Makers Fair coming December 11th and 12th of this year. We are going to be having handmade goods, food, live music, all kinds of fun stuff happening in the high school secondary courtyard from 2 to 5 both days. We're excited about this event because it represents our community and all of the creativity here. We've got amazing students, staff, and parents all involved in this event. If you didn't catch the details, It's coming up soon, December 11th and 12th from 2 to 5 p.m. in a secondary courtyard. You can follow us online at ICS Makers Fair. And if you have any questions, you can get in touch with me, Mrs. Asia.
See you there.
And we are back with our second segment, and I have Mr. Darwin, our local residential multimedia designer, in the studio. Chances are, if there's a poster, a sign, or an announcement of some sort you have seen around school, Mr. Darwin has had a hand in designing it. All right, to kick off this segment, I want to talk about some design no-nos first. These would be things that designers cringe about when they hear or see them. Then Mr. Darwin and I will present some best practices for design, and these are mainly for those of you who are not trained designers by trade, but want to learn and grow in this area. But first, let's get started with our first design no-no discussion question. So the question is this: what are some common design no-nos that instantly make a project look unprofessional? So go ahead, Mr. Darwin, let's get started with that one.
So the first one is overcrowding with too many elements, whether it's your image, fonts, and colors. This creates visual chaos and confuses the audience. You are designing to communicate or to inform. In order to do that, your design should not be overcrowded. But don't be scared to explore your design process.
So that's some good advice. Overcrowding, too many elements, and visual chaos. So we got to be careful of that, right?
Yep.
All right, the next talking point, let's see, is using low-quality images or assets. And this can diminish the overall credibility of the design. So low-quality image or assets. Maybe you can give us some more insight into this.
Ignoring alignment and spacing, which makes the design look disorganized and amateurish. This is something I am still perfecting in and is very crucial, especially if you are designing for a printed material.
For printed material, like Mr. Darwin was talking about, we have to understand the size, the output size, right? So starting with the end in mind and trying to understand how will this design, this piece, be used. And then going backwards from there, it'll help us understand what type of resolution or size should our images be. And sometimes staying away from clip art, right?
Yep.
All right, so our next talking point would be, why is choosing the wrong font a major design no-no, and how can designers avoid this mistake?
Well, mismatched fonts can distract from the message, especially if you're using a Comic Sans for a formal document. Some successful brands tend to use only one or two fonts in all their campaign.
So Comic Sans is probably a font we shouldn't put on a professional document.
That should be.
Yeah, Comic Sans is great, but it's very informal. It's okay to use it for maybe memes or other things, but like Mr. Darwin said, the font should be chosen according to what is the end result. Where is this document? Where is this design going to be shown? And kind of what's the design or what's the tone of that document? And that font should match. Okay, moving on to our next design no-no. This no-no is stated as overusing trendy fonts or overly decorative fonts, because this may feel dated and may go out of style too quickly. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, to avoid this, designers should consider readability, context, and tone. A general rule is to limit designs to two complementary fonts. If you're going to add another one, make sure it doesn't turn out to be a distraction from the main message.
Very good. So less is more when it comes to choosing font styles. Okay, moving on to our next no-no discussion question. How does neglecting mobile or responsive design affect user experience, and why is this a design no-no? What do you think?
Well, over 50% of web traffic comes from mobile devices. A design that doesn't adapt to smaller screens frustrates users and can lead to lost opportunities or clients. Make sure your artboard sizes are correct before you start designing.
So those who neglect the idea of responsive design usually will run into issues, especially with people who mainly look at design on their mobile device, because it may not fit the screen. So that's something to keep in mind, is to not ignore that idea of responsive design, especially within like the web design and application design field. I want to take this a step further and mention that even static designs like a logo Other brand elements such as graphics, textures, shapes, or color need to be responsive. They not only need to be responsive on the digital devices, but also in the real physical world. So a designer should create multiple versions of a logo, a vertical orientation and a horizontal orientation, with color and without color. Design should be responsive to the environment they will be used on or in. I used to consult businesses to keep their branding flexible and adaptable and not be too scripted in their brand style guides so as to miss opportunities where they could be even more creative and innovative. So what are your thoughts on some of those things, Mr. Darwin?
Best practices include testing on multiple devices and ensuring elements resize or reflow intuitively. If you don't have the luxury of owning multiple devices, send it to your friends who have different types of devices and ask for their opinion on how it looks.
It's a good idea. I like that. Send it to your friends, and usually your friends will be honest with you.
Yes.
Okay, so moving on to our next discussion question, and it's similar to the fonts question we talked about earlier. So it is, why is using too many colors in a design considered a no-no, and how can designers create a balanced color palette? What are your thoughts on that?
For me, too many colors can overwhelm the viewer, make design look cluttered, and detract from the overall message. Although, if you're going to do a colorful design, you should know how to pull it off.
Very good. Know how to pull it off. So a lack of color harmony may also create a chaotic or unprofessional feel. So there's a whole study, and it's called color theory. And that's something that color can add so much to a design. But if used inappropriately or the different type of colors are used, it can invoke a feeling or an emotion or tone that was not necessarily intended for that design. So do you have any more thoughts on that, Mr. Darwin?
Designers should stick to a cohesive color palette with 2 to 4 primary colors and leverage tools like Adobe Color or Coolors to select complementary schemes. Using consistent brand colors help maintain visual identity.
Very good. I'm glad you brought that up because there are a lot of tools out there that can help us. So if you're not an expert in this idea of like putting complementary colors together, primary, secondary, or even knowing what different colors, what type of emotions they can invoke, there are great tools out there like Adobe Color. There's another one called Coolors. There's lots of books that give examples of how to put different colors together and how those can communicate different things. Okay, moving on to our next question, and it has to do with white space. So the question is this: what makes neglecting white space or negative space a significant design mistake? So what are your thoughts on that one?
This is somehow my pet peeve when it comes to designing. So filling every inch of design makes it hard for the viewers to focus, leading to cognitive overload or misunderstanding the details of the information you want to convey.
I would agree. This is a big pet peeve of mine too. Putting too many things together, therefore it clutters out the main message, right? So white space enhances readability, creates a breathing space, and draws attention to key elements. Your eyes, just like you need to breathe air, your brain, your eyes need to breathe as well. So if we cram too much together in a poster or some sort of design, it actually works against the main message. So design with restraint, keep some space on there. And so do you have any more thoughts on that one, Mr. Darwin?
Designers can avoid the mistake by prioritizing simplicity and actively leaving margins, paddings, and clear areas around focal points. Think of white space as an essential design element, not wasted space.
Ooh, I like that. It is an essential design element. Even though it's negative, there's nothing there, space can be used in a very positive way, even though it's negative space. Okay, moving on to our next question. It is, why is skipping user testing or feedback a critical design no-no, and how can this be avoided?
The first one, without testing, designers might create something visually appealing but impractical or confusing to the end user.
Oh, very good. So visually appealing or impactful or confusing to the end user. We need to get the feedback of the people who will be using or looking at it, right? So solutions include prototyping, gathering feedback early, and iterating based on real user interactions. And this really has to do heavily within the digital design or application design field.
And remember, design is for the user, not the designer's personal preferences.
Oh, very good point. Very good point. It's not necessarily just about our own personal preference or opinion, which can be very subjective, but we've got to think of that user. Moving on from design no-nos, we'd like to end with some design best practices. So Mr. Darwin and I have condensed several different lists together into one general top 10 list we both agree on, right?
Yes.
All right, thank you. This list is focused toward the graphic or creative design fields like graphic design, web design, UI design. However, some of these best practices can be applied to other disciplines such as architecture, interior design, and product design. I'll start with the first design best practice on our list, and it is keep it simple. Okay, keep it simple. Avoid overcrowding your design with too many elements. Use white space effectively, like we talked about earlier. And using white space effectively can communicate or give your content room to breathe. All right, next on our list, what's number two, Mr. Darwin?
The second one on our list is use a grid for alignment. Grids ensure proper alignment and spacing, make your design look balanced and professional.
Nice, grid. And grids are essentially invisible to the user when they see it.
Yes.
But it is a really handy tool that we can use to plot things in the space and put them appropriately so there is balance. Moving on to our third item on the list, and it's choose a consistent color palette. This idea is to stick to 2 to 3 main primary colors and maybe a few accent colors. Use tools like Adobe Color, like we said earlier, coolers, or to find harmonious color schemes. All right, moving on to number four. What's number four, Mr. Darwin?
The fourth design practice is stick to readable fonts. You should limit your designs to 1 to 2 font families and prioritize readability. Pair a bold font for headlines with a simple font for the body text.
I like that. Just like we were talking about design no-nos, these are some best practices when it comes to not only like the color, choosing a color palette, but like number four here is focusing on finding 1 to 2 fonts. All right, on to our number five on the list of best practices. It's use high quality images and graphics. So avoid pixelated or blurry images. Don't just copy something from Google and then slap it in your, you know, page or on your design. Use free resources like Unsplash, Pexels, Pixabay, or Canva to professionally present good quality visuals. And I think this is another pet peeve of probably both of ours.
Yes.
Is when we see low resolution, pixelated clip art images just thrown on something. So do the hard work, find a good image that represents, and that will add something to your design. And don't cut corners and just find cheap clip art pieces out there on the internet, right?
Correct.
All right. So let's move on to number six. What's number six on our list?
Well, before that, I want to add, there's also free resources with AI that can enhance your pictures with a price, of course. But moving on to number six. The number six design practice is pay attention to contrast. If using text, ensure it stands out from the background and is readable. Light text on a dark background or vice versa enhances readability.
So that's a good one. So contrast, I think some people forget about that as being a design principle, is using contrast to your benefit. Okay, moving on to our seventh design practice, which is maintain visual hierarchy. So guide the viewer's eye by prioritizing the most important elements, headlines, images, even bodies of text, using size, color, or placement. The most important thing should be at the top, or be the one element that demands the most attention. So use hierarchy, where you put things, the size of things, and how they're placed on your canvas or in your composition so that people know what's most important. All right, we're gonna move on to number eight. What's number eight on our list?
Design best practice number eight is balance your design. Symmetry and balance make a design pleasing to the eye. Distribute elements evenly across the layout. The elements in the design should not be competing for attention.
Symmetry, right? So balance the design. And of course, that goes back to white space and all that kind of stuff too. So balance your design. That's number 8. Moving on to number 9, and we're almost done with our top 10 list. Number 9 is be consistent with the branding. So if the design is for a brand or like a company or somebody or something or an organization, use consistent logos, fonts, and colors to create a cohesive look across all the materials. A brand is important because those elements represent the identity of the business or company or organization that you're working with. And this brings us to number 10, our final design practice. And it is, what is it, Mr. Darwin?
It's test your design. View your design on multiple devices in different formats to ensure it looks good everywhere. As I mentioned earlier, with multiple devices, ask a few trusted colleagues for their opinions.
All right, so that's number 10, test your design. And that's our top 10 list of best practices that you can, or we can, as people who want to create good design, can follow. So, and there you have it, some best practices to remember when designing. Just another word of advice, design software is a tool. So a design software does not make you a better designer. Design software is a tool that we can use as designers. So like all tools, principles and best practices need to be followed in order to use that tool effectively. And I hope this episode has provided some guidance in doing so. So thank you again, Mr. Darwin, for being on the show. Any last words of advice?
Well, thank you for having me here, and just keep on creating.
Well, I like that. Keep on creating. All right. Thank you. As we end this episode, we'd like to thank our sponsor again, the Makers Faire, which will be held on December 11th and 12th from 2 to 5 p.m. at ICS. Stay tuned for our next episode as we take you on an actual field trip. I'll just leave it at that for now. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.